Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week we bring you the insider's guide to property investing.
Oh, that's new.
That's new. What's the difference?
Well, you said Ben and I, whereas now it's we.
Yeah, well, mate, 120 episodes. And everyone just thinks that's a cut-in of the week before, but it's not. I do it live.
We've changed the introduction.
Mate, do you know why I actually did it?
Why's that?
Because I was just wondering if you listen.
Well, I normally don't.
Normally you don't. If only the listeners could actually see where Ben, when I'm talking, he's like,
He's waiting for
me to take a breath. Mate, he's in. So, which is good, mate, because you've got so much gold. Hey, we've got a big show planned.
We've got a big guest.
But we'll get
Sydney.
To that.
Yep.
We will get to that out of Sydney. But latest REA video, Ben, realestate.com.au. It's out.
What are we talking about?
Mate, me and you on that football oval in Hawthorne.
Oh, yes, Glenferrie Oval.
No, it's not.
No.
Ivers, it's in the pub. It's in the pub.
We're back in the pub.
It's you and me talking about what does pool,
and we know,
game of billiard.
We are all over. We are all over what we're doing.
We're talking about pool. So go to Ivers. We'll go to Facebook. We'll go to Twitter. We'll go to all social media. Go and check that video and find out, Ben, what does snooker/billiards have to do with getting a loan.
Oh, I like it. And you know, our video 3,
yep,
it's already had over 190,000 watches.
Wow, mate.
That's pretty cool.
Ivers, how many downloads are we up to? 1.6. Did you see that?
Million.
She just refuses. I tried to get her voice out. Yeah, so 1.6 million downloads. So thank you for everyone who's listening. But Ben, before we get to our very special guest today, I'm going to talk about Mindset Minute. And it's actually interesting because our guest is very much into mindset, and I hope we'll get some real gold. But it's not what you say out of your mouth that determines your life, Ben.
Mm.
It's what you whisper to yourself that has the most power.
Mm. Go Pies. Is that what you mean?
We've already addressed that on the REA video, Ben.
Go Pies.
We've already addressed that. But
come on.
It's not what you say out of your mouth that determines your life.
No.
It's what you whisper to yourself that has the most power. Robert Kiyosaki said that. Now, Ben, I've got this view that thoughts affect your feelings.
Mm.
Your feelings affect your actions.
And your health.
Actions affect your results.
Ooh, can you say that again? Because obviously...
Because you weren't listening.
I interrupted.
You're too busy being a... I can't put E on this podcast, so you're busy being something. Your thoughts affect your feelings.
Yes.
Which is a real check for you. Have you got feelings?
Yeah.
Thoughts affect your feelings.
I get upset when the pie's loose.
Feelings affect your actions.
Mm-hmm.
Actions affect your results.
Mm.
So if we rewind, it's all about your thoughts. So I'll say it again. It's not what you say out of your mouth that determines your life. It's what you whisper to yourself that has the most power. Self-talk, Ben.
The internal playing with the external.
Exactly. So, all right, Ben, we've got a very special guest today, Tom Panos, who's no stranger to real estate for the listing agents out there, but for the property investors, we're really privileged because Tom, despite having a very good pedigree professionally, he's also a property investor himself. So welcome to the couch, Tom.
Thank you, Bryce. Thank you, Ben. Good to be here. And I love talking about stuff that I'm into, and real estate and property, I'm just so into.
Well, there's a fair bit that you're into, Tom. You're the founder of the Real Estate Gym. You're also the 5 AM Club. You do a weekly podcast with John McGrath called The Million Dollar Agent. You're the Real Estate Advertising Director for News Corp. You're one of Sydney's leading auctioneers. You're a keynote speaker. You're a commentator. My only question for you is, are you ever home?
I'm not home heaps. So I'm not home heaps. Like I've been, I would say in the last 2 months, I've had maybe 8 nights at home because that included a bit of work overseas in Europe, and I took 2 or 3 weeks off. So I haven't been home a lot, but I've got to tell you, I've been doing it for 15 years, guys, and I've got to say, it doesn't feel hard. It feels normal. That's what I'm used to.
So, Tom, what do you do in your spare time outside of, I mean, you know, you live and breathe this industry, and as Bryce was saying, everyone who's in the real estate industry absolutely know who Tom Panos is. He's you know, probably top three in regards to exposed people in Australia in real estate. So what is it that, I mean, you love your NRL, you've got your team.
Yeah.
Is it St. George, is that right?
No, but you're half right, so I do follow NRL. Sorry, so
that's it's the Rabbitohs. Oh, no, that's John. That's John.
No, so you're, no, actually, if we spend 5 minutes, we'll probably go through every team. So far, none of that is good. Right. So what I'd say is the team I go for is the West Tigers.
Tigers, that's who I meant.
West Tigers. So, like, if you had to say to me, spare time, main things is... gym, going for a run around the Bay Run, which I live in Haberfield, and the Bay Run's about 5 minutes from my house. Love hanging out at the cafe and having two cups of coffee and just familiarizing myself with what's happened in sport and the world and banking and real estate via reading things either on my iPhone or even reading various newspapers. And, you know, guys, I've been married for 25 years and I've got two daughters. So I would say Sunday is the day that I've got more time to do social and family stuff. And I just think it's like usual stuff. Like I go shopping with the family and then, yeah, I would say gym, watching sport, West Tigers, love Sydney FC, Sydney Swans. So
it's good that you made an AFL reference there. One of the criticisms that Ben and I get is we're mad AFL fans and we're a bit clueless when it comes to NRL. So our Sydney and Queensland-based listeners have to absorb the fog of AFL. But you put here that you're the founder of the 5 a.m. club. Outside of getting up at 5 o'clock, is there more to it than that, or is it just the discipline of being an early riser?
That's it. There's nothing to it. It's not like something that's an entity that exists that people join or anything. I mean, I actually get up at around 4:30, 4:45, but 5 a.m. club, it's just got a good ring to it. I'm just a big believer that if you wake up early, that's the way your day unfolds. And I can't help but noticing that not everyone, but a lot of very successful people usually like to have a 2 or 3 hour advantage over the rest of the planet. And that's all it is. It's actually not a club as such.
Mate, I've tried the 5 a.m. club, and with two young kids, the 6 a.m. is as good as it gets for me. But do you back it up at the other end of the day? Are you going to bed early, or you just don't need a lot of sleep?
I think no. I think the 5 a.m. club has also got the 9:30 p.m. club. I think it's... Yep. I don't think the 5 a.m. club can exist with the midnight club. And by the way, you know, anyone listening to this, waking up at 5 o'clock... or not waking up at 5 o'clock doesn't mean that you're a winner or a loser. The point I'm making is that having a ritual, a morning ritual, to me works really well. Just having predictable behavior. And for me, the pattern is wake up around 4:30, 4:45, be very mindful for around 5 or 10 minutes and meditate slash pray slash think about what's great in my life and pretty much visualize, you know, what are the 3 or 4 things that I've got to smash that day that are my MIT's most important tasks? You know, having a coffee, going to the gym, making sure that there is emails and SMSs to people. I've got a habit. I've got 9 calls before 9 a.m. every day, right? And 3 of those calls go to new business calls, 3 of those calls go to current client calls, and 3 of those calls go what I call culture calls, people in my organization or suppliers that I need to speak to. And guys, I just feel like if I wake up at 5, if I do that ritual and I have that habit, that I have a great day, because the way you start your day is generally the way your day unfolds.
Yeah, no, I love it.
All right, Tom, I mean, we are huge advocates of your work in regards to productivity and mindset. I mean, you know, obviously you led the sort of show at ARIC,
yeah,
which is the Australian Real Estate Agent Conference. You've been doing that for many years now. Some of the gold that you share around productivity, mindset, and observation of high performers is exactly the sort of stuff we want to get out to our listeners just in their life. I mean, you know, they may not be wedded to the whole bricks and mortar story like you and I are, and it may not be their passion. It just may be a vehicle for wealth creation. And from that point of view, we sort of say to them, the 5am Club says to me that that is all about you being a leader in discipline and a leader in getting the productivity and doing what you say you're going to do and basically planning to become what you plan to become.
Yeah, Tom, because you're the king of the pocket phrases, because I quoted you last week. We have a Mindset Minute at the beginning of our podcast, and I quoted you where you talk about 80% of winning is beginning. You often talk about the best gifts come poorly wrapped, and there's a whole range of them. A couple of things. Where do you pick those up, and how do you retain them? Because I've seen you call them at will.
So, Bryce, I think what I've learned is try in anything that you're reading, listening, or any conversation that you have with people, if you can get a subject summarized in one sentence, I pretty much plagiarize it. And the reason why is that people have got a really short attention span. So I say never use 1,000 words when 50 will do, because you get impact. And what you've got to learn is to say the truth very efficiently. And that's why I am sort of always on the lookout, no matter what I'm doing, a podcast like listening to yours, an audiobook from audible.com, a conference, a seminar. I'm looking for the sentence that encapsulates the message that I want to say.
Yeah.
And part two of your question is, how do I do it? I would say that I would read and listen to more personal development stuff than most people.
Yeah, no, I believe that. I believe that. Now, you've got some very high-profile opportunities of late, Tom, but what was it like when you first started in your real estate career? Take the listeners back to, I mean, you've got a really great story about Weber Barbecues, but what was it like early days for you, and how did you get involved in real estate?
My parents came from Greece, moved to Sydney, a suburb called Belmore, which is, you know, the southwest of Sydney. It's a lower socioeconomic area, and, you know, my parents worked pretty hard, got me through a public school, and they always had intentions that I went to university, dropped out. First 2 years, I just got into various sales jobs, and then I got into real estate. Bryce, I absolutely loved it. I thought to myself, you know, I can do this for the rest of my life. And the driving force was in the first few years in real estate to actually show my parents that you don't actually need to have a university degree to get ahead in life. And that was my driving force. I mean, subsequently, look, I've gone back to uni. I've actually finished, you know, a master's degree, but that was like 8 years later. But my first few years, guys, it was just obsessed with work and hustling and grinding 7 days, morning to night.
Where do you think you got that work ethic from, Tom? Was it watching your parents? I mean, or was it, you know, we all have our why reasons and our motivators, and, you know, some people it's because they bottomed out and they needed to change their life. You know, what was it for you? What was the thing that where you think you've just got this? Because you're an incredibly hard worker. You're incredibly successful. We'll talk about your, you know, property investing soon. But what was it, that inner drive for you? What is it?
It changes constantly, and it's very different to what it was back then. So let's just go through, because I actually, it's really interesting, Ben, because I actually, like, if you sat through the ARIC conference, you would have heard a lot of people talking about their why and what is their major vision or their calling in life. I'm not a huge believer in that. I don't personally believe that you're conceived and you come out onto this planet and that you've got your destiny. Like, I don't think that Steve Jobs' destiny was for him to create the iPhone. What actually happens is you do stuff, right? The stuff that drives you for whatever reason. For me, the early driver was to prove to my parents that I'm not going to be a loser because I dropped out of uni. Then the second driver, so that took me through the first couple of years. Then the second driver was money. I wanted absolute money because I actually thought to myself, if you've got money, you've actually got power. Because if you've got money, you can buy the items and objects that you want. You're going to be able to go and pick the girls that you want to go out with, because I had this idea in my head and a story that what actually happens is the guy with the best cars and the best money will be able to give, you know, his partner the best options, so she'll pick him. Then it sort of changes when you actually have money and you don't need as much money. Then your driver is, hey, I want admiration from other people. I want other people to say, look at him. He's the best at his field. He's the one that gets up there getting the awards. Then all of a sudden what actually happens is you realize that your time is more valuable because everyone wants a piece of you. And then you think to yourself, hey, what's driving me is how can I have more freedom? So I suppose what I'm saying, guys, is the currency changes all the time, but what hasn't changed the whole time that drives me is I double down, as Gary Vaynerchuk says. I work my strengths. I keep doing stuff that I like doing and I'm good at, and it never feels tiring. That is, to me, the absolute secret, to only participate in things that you are madly in love with, because that's when you make passion your paycheck. And it doesn't mean that there are things that you don't like that don't need to be done. It just means that you either do less of them and get other people to help you with them, or you just structure your life that they're actually picked up by the system itself, and that you don't have to spend yourself doing stuff that emotionally drains you too much. So the driver has changed for, you know, like I turned 50 on the weekend. So over the last 30 years, the driver just keeps changing. I mean, I'm like last year, I was totally sick. Like I got diagnosed with cancer the day after Eric last year, which was around May 28, you know, in 2016. And all of a sudden, the driver is not recognition. The driver's not money. The driver is hope this chemotherapy and radiation and antibody treatment and stem cell work they're doing eliminates the cancer that for some reason has grown in my body. So drivers just change.
Mm. Yeah, because you're the one quoting, you know, health is real wealth. So I'm sure that, you know, the 28th of May, that became more acute to you than ever.
Yeah. Well, I've learned never swap health for income, because the highest form of wealth is your health. You know,
I think you can ask Steve Jobs that, couldn't you?
Yeah, like Warren Buffett. I was watching a movie the other day on a flight home, and Warren Buffett said, imagine being told that you're only going to have one car given to you, and you can pick any car in the world, and you can have that for the rest of your life. No matter what car you pick, you would look after that car. That is, in fact, what actually happens with our body. We're given one.
Yeah, it's a great doco, isn't it, Tom? We've been shouting that out to our listeners to check it out.
Hey, Tom, let's take us back to you have been a property investor. We talked before we hit the record button about that, but can you let the listeners know what did that look like for you? Because you know you're definitely an advocate of property investing, and you're a long-term property investor. Can you take us back to how that started and what that first decision to buy the first property looked like?
Yeah, first property, I was working as a real estate salesperson, and I bought a property in Punch Bowl. And Punch Bowl's not known as being a glamour suburb. In fact, most of the times you would read about Punch Bowl, there would have been, you know, in previous years, shootings and gangs and what have you in the southwest of Sydney. But I bought a two-bedroom unit in a place called Victoria Street. And I remember at the time, I paid 80 grand. I painted it, and I put in new carpets, and I rented it out, and off the top of my head, I sold it for 93 grand, and I used the funds that I had, the equity in that property, and the very small gain that I had. Like, there was no gain in it, but I sold this property so I can set up a real estate office. After that, I shortly bought another property in the inner west of Sydney, St. Peter's, for like about, I don't know, I can't remember that, 120 grand again. I renovated. But I can tell you, guys, the first few properties were a grind. They were a grind. Like, I remember like having to scrimp and save for deposits. I remember having to actually do it really hard for 2 to 3 years in terms of not going out, no holidays, like being conscious of how much money I was spending. But ever since then, it's been pretty easy.
And so, Tom, obviously you've been blessed with being able to build a multi-million dollar property portfolio because of this effort and your discipline. In terms of research and selection, what sort of theories were you using, or was it just when I had money and I knew the area, I just bought in an area that I knew, or was there any sort of science to your selection?
Pretty much what you just said there. What happened is, as soon as I had, like, roughly at the time, 20 or 30 grand, and as soon as a property came on the market that I thought, if I actually spent 30 or 40 grand renovating it, I would increase the value of that property by 50 grand at the end of the renovation, I would go in and buy it. And what would happen is I would then get the bank to revalue it, and I would use the equity of that property to actually fund the next opportunity that came up. So I would say the first... By the way, guys, I'm really enjoying talking about this because I've actually not ever gone back and reflected on how it all happened. And it's funny that we're having this conversation because last night I had my accountant over doing my assessment for, you know, the previous year, which is FinYear 015. Is that right? Yeah, FinYear 015 was way overdue and I got it done. And it's helping me reflect and understand, because I actually never had a strategy. The strategy was a bit of an accident, but when you look backwards now, it begins to make sense what I was actually doing, and that is increasing the equity I had in properties by trying to buy something that I knew after a quick renovation, I would have grown my equity in that property faster than what the market had gone up.
And Tom, were you doing the hands-on renovation, or were you getting others to do the dirty work?
Okay, so what I would do is I would actually go to the property 3 to 4 times a week in the morning, and I would actually see tradespeople that were there. And there was a guy that I'd met who was a property dealer. His name was George Pappas. Now, he would be 80 or 90 now. But what I did is I was looking at the formula, because this guy would have bought and sold hundreds of properties in the inner west of Sydney. And I was looking at his formula, and he was kind enough to actually be meeting me for... He helped me do 2 properties. And there, right, I learned the formula. And the formula was that you basically needed to have a good plumber, a good electrician, a good carpenter, a painter. And what would happen is I would probably save, you know, maybe 20, 30 grand by me just meeting tradespeople there in the mornings. But Ben, I can tell you, I haven't done that for a many
years. You're now the classic passive investor.
Yeah.
Hey Tom, you mentioned before that you know, looking back, you didn't have a strategy, and a lot of our listeners are sort of you know, at various places along the property portfolio building journey. But for those of them that don't have a strategy, have you articulated what that looks like now? And by that, I mean, you've been in accumulation phase over time.
Yeah.
But what's, now that you're looking forward, what is the end goal for you? Are you just going to continue to accumulate as your cash flows allow? Is there a passive income strategy? What is it for you?
It's pretty much this. So the way I look at it is, my strategy works down to the following points. If you own $20 million worth of real estate and you have bought in areas that will average out at giving you 10% growth a year. Some years it will be 15, other years it'll be 5, some years it will be nothing, other years it'll be a really strong year. But hypothetically, if you're getting 10%, that is, in 1 year, you have made $2 million while you sleep, right? Mm. So to me, the secret is, you've got to get yourself getting comfortable being uncomfortable, that knowing that the real risk is actually not being in the market, because every time you're not in the market, you're potentially losing 10%. So for me, guys, my strategy is, whenever you have the cash flow, just buy. If you don't, you're missing out on time playing the long game. And the long game is where you actually win in real estate. That pretty much is my strategy. There is...
So, Tom, just on the cash flow thing, because like, we are big advocates for cash flow, has there ever been a time where your situation where you were starved of cash flow and you thought, well, I've gone a bit too aggressive here now and I might need to sell one? Or have you been able to hold on to all of the properties and continue to accumulate?
My third purchase, a pair of terraces in Enmore. So I bought these two terraces in Enmore, 19 and 21. It doesn't really matter what the address is.
We don't need the address.
I've still got them, right? So I bought these two terraces with the...
What year, Tom, was that? Was
93? I'll tell you straight, I've got nothing to hide. So 19 and 21 Weimer Street in Enmore, bought these two terraces and bought them in around 93, bought them for 420, so I bought them at auction as a pair, 420, and my plan was what I would do is go subdivide them, which was just some paperwork to do, and then I would have, you know, two terraces, one worth 210 and another one worth 210. But after my renovation, I would add value, sell one. I couldn't actually get any. I thought I'd be able to sell it really quickly, but then the agents were telling me, you're not going to get it, the money that you want. So I ended up keeping them, and that was a little bit of a grind because I remember that all of a sudden I, you know, cancelled a holiday. I all of a sudden had to sit down with my wife, and my wife said, hey, listen, you can't just keep spending the way, because now we hadn't accounted to have this $440,000 or $420,000 debt. We had only accounted to have lower, so just got to be a little bit tighter. That was the only time. And to answer your second part of the question, never since then has there been cash flow issues, because I am probably, it's a negative, I'm pretty conservative. Like, I've never had problems getting funds off banks because I'm more conservative on myself than what the bank is.
Mm. Yeah, which is a nice place to be, Tom. I mean, you mentioned before that you buy whenever cash flow allows and hold them for the long term. You're in the newspaper business, which is in the business of reporting on property either booming or busting. And to be honest, we're about to face some headwinds with the news that we receive.
Yeah.
How do you mentor people who come to you for advice around property? You know, probably with the backdrop of becoming Warren Buffett documentary, you know, the ultimate long-term investor. What advice do you give to people to say, hey, look, you've got to play the long game here and you are going to face some of these headlines, but stay the course? Do you get that question, and how do you handle it?
Yeah, look, I do. I get that question all the time. But I mean, ironically, I get that question from people that rock up with a $100,000 car that's got, you know, lease payments of, say, $2,500 a month. They're probably wearing a $1,500 suit, and they most likely have just come back from a holiday that, between air travel, accommodation, and drinking and partying money, they've spent 15 grand. And they're frustrated because what they're doing is they're making decent money. Because most of my conversations are with people that are in sales professions, and they're making decent money, but they've got like 5, 10, 15 grand in the bank because they're spending more of their money and their time looking like they've got money than actually accumulating money. So the first thing I say to them is, guys, drop the ego and understand that what's going to give you absolute freedom in your life is not getting the approval of other people, but being able to put yourself and create. You've got to plan the escape out of whether you're working in the corporate world, or whether you're working as a tradesperson, or whether you're working as a real estate salesperson. You've got to plan the escape. No one's going to come and rescue you. You've got to plan the escape. And for me, property investment is the escape. You can clearly tell, like, how, think about this, guys, for a moment. How, when I'm talking to a young guy, I'm saying to them, even if you write $1 million in commissions, even if you make $1 million in commissions, you've got to pay about half of that to your real estate office, leaves you with $500,000. Out of that $500,000, you've got to pay two admin staff, leaves you with $350,000. Then you've got to pay the tax office, right? So you're going to pay a third of that, even if you've got a company set up, leaves you with $200,000. And you haven't even yet bought a cup of coffee. You haven't paid your rent. You haven't paid your car lease payment. You haven't paid any school fees. So how can you win when you play that game, when you're playing against someone else who might have $5 million worth of real estate? Well, actually, don't even talk about $5 million. Let's talk about if they've got $1 million worth of real estate. They make money while they sleep. They'll make 10% on January 1 each year because they're playing the long game. So what I say is, be prepared to hustle and grind and do it hard for the first 3, 4, 5 years in saving money, in being comfortable going to bed at night knowing that you've got a mortgage out, which means that you're losing a bit of flexibility in life, because it means you can't just pack up and say, that's it, I'm disappearing, I'm moving over to Spain for 6 months and partying, or I'm doing that. It creates you to have to be disciplined. Ben and Bryce, this is what I say to them. Hustle and grind and save and invest in property in your 20s and 30s so you can start chilling in your 40s.
Oh, that's great advice. I'm really great advice.
Sorry for going on, but you can, like, it upsets me when I see a lot of people make good money. They got great turnover, but they got zero leftover.
Yeah, they've got nothing to show for it, have they? They've just,
yeah.
You know, they might have a few great memories in the memory bank, but a lot of it is,
yeah.
You know, the power of property investing is, if you do the hard yards early, this can be, you know, the passive power of that income for not having to do much for it. It's just incredible. Once you build that base wealth up, it just continues to be in perpetuity. You just continue to keep getting that rent, that passive income, the value of those assets grow. And, you know, you talk about the different stages in your life, the time you get, the choices you're able to make. And you know, money's not everything. Let's be clear about that. But what it does allow is the choice to do what you want to do.
Yeah, well said, Ben. I mean, we talk to our community of listeners, Tom, all the time about the power of a mentor. And a lot of it is, you know, the opportunity to get a virtual mentor. And, you know, I've listened to a lot of your podcasts, the individual one. You have the seven-figure agent. I listen to Million Dollar Agent. And largely, I'm not a listing agent myself. I'm a buyer's agent. But I really do like the mindset stuff that that you and John and Troy talk about. Ben and I have had a chat with John. It was a terrific thrill to meet him. But you get to rub shoulders with him all the time. What sort of impact do you... Does having sort of one of the titans of Australian real estate have in your life and help you stay on the path with what you're doing?
In the early stages, my friendship with John, I'm really close to John because he's been one of the people that have stood by me in times that I've had challenges in my health, which is two times now, in 06 and in 016. And he has been there throughout the whole process, right? When you're most vulnerable, he's there like every day. So I'm totally indebted to him. Mm. So, I mean, there's a saying, you know, when the shit goes down, sides are taken. That's when we work out who's fake and who's real. And here's the real deal. From a business perspective, John McGrath gave me an opportunity to actually, he was an influencer and a connector to the real estate industry. And he was able to connect me with lots of people. So I have News Corp, right? News Corp have done the same. John McGrath has done the same. And the third thing is, your friends end up being your best coaches and mentors, because if you spend enough time with them, you can't help it. You then begin to mirror their beliefs. You then begin to mirror their mindsets. You then begin to actually think like they would in a particular situation. So over the last, you know, 15 to 20 years with John, whether it's been intentional or whether it's just been by time with him, that I've just been able to look at challenges, and the way that you view a problem is the problem, and he's helped me to understand that.
Well, obviously, the two of you are a dynamic duo. You're incredible in terms of the passion you have for the real estate industry and what you do to you know, for peak performance. And I think it's really important to note that you're not only building great real estate agents, but the way in which you go about it, your integrity and, you know, how humble both of you are, you're basically building great people. If people follow your success formulas, what you're actually doing is building great human beings that get a better understanding of who they are in life and also get to enjoy the work that they do when they're passionate about that. And I think that's a credit to both of you. So, you know, just amazing. Any other mentors that you know, or people who have guided you, Tom, that you want to shout out to that, you know, have taught you something?
Look, I don't want to do any specific shout-outs because anyone that I don't shout-out will get to you. So I won't make specifics, but I have to say to you, there are so many authors out there, whether they've done it via a book. I mean, there's a saying that the hand that picks up a book is never the same hand that puts it back down. And in my case, I've had so many books. It's been the perfect book read at the perfect time. Mm. And they have changed my thinking. So I feel like I've had breakfast or, you know, lunch or coffee with the best authors on the planet, but I've never really met them. So, you know, there is hundreds of people that would fall into that category. At various times in my life, I've needed to have various mentors. I mean, at times where I've had to face possibility that I was going to die, I've usually gone and had spiritual mentors that helped me understand, you know, what it all means. At other times, I've had accidental mentors, like I said, George Pappas. Like, I only thought about him now talking to you guys, but I've just got to accept it. This guy taught me a formula as a young 21-year-old on how to actually get into property, how to actually build equity quickly, and how to actually feel comfortable going to sleep at night knowing that you're this person that's got this debt. So he taught me that. Along the way, just sitting in rooms and meetings, presenting to Rupert Murdoch and actually sitting at meetings there, I've learned other things about, you know, the importance of being able to read the play and to actually understand that, like, I believe, and Gary Vaynerchuk said it, but I do it in my own life, you've actually got to become your own media company in this new world, because getting the attention of people is the currency, is the highest value currency we have in 2017. Mm. So Gary Vaynerchuk, definitely, my membership website, realestatejim.com.au, has been pretty much built on his strategy of building a social media profile, winning the digital and the social interview, and then being able to understand on how to monetizing it.
Well, for the benefit of our listeners, Tom, they probably, a lot of them who don't go to ARIC might not be familiar with Gary Vaynerchuk, but he's an incredibly energetic. He kept, you know, he was, you flew over, I think it was to New York, and interviewed him, and you know, tongue in cheek, you talk about the fact that 98% of the questions you wanted to ask didn't get answered, but he captivated us the whole time. What was the lasting impression that you had on him? I know that the media company, but what were some of the mental attitudes that you took away from Gary that might benefit our listeners that they can implement?
Look, I liked him because he reflects my non-negotiables and my musts in life. You know, so he's a family guy. I'm into that. He speaks at conferences and at a lot bigger conferences than I do, and probably a lot more, but I do that, but I also run a full-time job. I've been an executive at News Corp for 13 years. Right, so I'm not out there sitting there like a lot of, you know, conference speakers or trainers that basically get on a plane, do a talk, then come back and take 3 days off, and they're speaking to their speakers bureau about trying to get another gig. I'm out there doing this stuff every day. When I leave from here, I'm going to go off and have a one-on-one with someone that needs to have a crucial conversation. After that, I've got a strategy meeting that goes for 3 hours. After that, I've got to actually sit there with a client and work out an issue. So I'm pretty much doing stuff which he does as well. So I like that. But most important thing I liked about him is that he uses two thought processes that I think are absolutely critical, and that is ruthlessly eliminate excuses and stop whinging. And the second one is be grateful, because it's an actual miracle that you're on this planet. So
that's consistent, isn't it, Tom? If from Tim Ferriss to yourself to Gary Vaynerchuk to anyone with any form of success and where money doesn't matter, it's a universal thing where they say that gratefulness is the single point of change for their own mental happiness. So that is just coming up consistently, and it's something that I've implemented in my own life to make a difference.
Beautiful.
Now, Tom, we are conscious of your time. As you say, you're a News Corp exec. You've got lots on. Can we just finish off with one? You're one of Sydney's leading auctioneers. You might be seen on, you know, Sky News, Real Estate on the weekend, doing a couple of auctions. You do several auctions each weekend. Can you, obviously from the buyer's point of view, can you just share a couple of tips in terms of how a buyer should approach an auction to try and get the best result they can in terms of winning the property on the day?
So 29 years, Ben, I've been doing this, and I can pretty much tell you there's no formula. there is no formula. Unfortunately, here's the deal. If it's a property that's really good, there's going to be plenty of people fighting over it, and you will not be buying at a bargain price. The positive is that value of the property, whether you sell it soon or whether you keep it, is going to accelerate fast because it's got the X factor that attracted people there. So step number one is, if you're bidding on a property that's a good property, don't expect to buy a bargain. What you've got to be looking at is the fact that if you don't buy it, how much is it going to cost you not being in the market? The second thing I will say to you is that if you are bidding, knowing what I know today, I would bid assertively at an auction, because there is a group of people that leave an auction that I go over and say, you know, thanks for coming along. Unfortunately, you didn't do well today, and I'm sure that, you know, you'll find another property soon, like an underbidder. And many times that underbidder said, well, what was the point of bidding anymore? You could tell that they really wanted it and they weren't going to stop. So that person has been, in many ways, been intimidated by that bidder who was bidding fast, loud, and aggressively. So I would probably say that would be the only thing I can think that might actually scare a competitor. The third thing I would say is, hey, spend more time in this property project if you're looking to buy than posting photos of you eating, you know, your avocado sandwich, right?
Smashed avocado on toast, yeah.
Right. Avocado, right? Because, like, realistically, the return on investment is going to be much better. Like, in 20 years' time, are people going to care about that photo that you spent 30 minutes on trying to put the right filter on Instagram to look good? Or will in 30 years, you're going to be looking back, like I have, which is about 30 years now, saying to myself, you know, I'm just so happy I bought those terraces. Yeah. And I didn't get rid
of
them.
What are they worth now today, Tom? Just roughly, in your, you know, what do you think those two terraces?
What are they worth? One and a half each.
That's 210,000 to one.
It's not bad growth.
There we go. There's a living in that.
Hey, Tom, I've got a final one for you because I know you got to go. But someone comes up to you today and they say, Tom, I want to buy my first investment property and I've got $700 to $900 to spend. Where are you telling them to buy, and what are you telling them to buy?
Preference is to buy a house in Melbourne or Sydney, and the closest you can towards the city. So if you can't buy in that suburb, you go one suburb further out. If you can't buy in that suburb, you go one suburb further out. And this doesn't mean that Brisbane and Adelaide and all these other regional areas are not good investments, but I know that on past track record that Sydney and Melbourne and houses have had great growth. Maybe not the best of yields, but growth for someone that's coming to me saying, hey, I want to buy, you know, one of my first properties, $700 to $900, growth is got to be something that's got to be a higher metric for you than yield.
That's very Tom. Good.
Thank you, Tom.
Some wonderful wisdom. Hey, look, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us, Tom. I think there's some enormous benefit that our listeners will get from your wisdom, your 30 years of property investing, as well as being someone who's really relevant and at the coalface in terms of the real estate industry. So, you know, we appreciate your time today.
We do. Thank you so much, Tom. You're an absolute legend, and we love having you on.
Thank you, guys. It's fantastic, and it's great to see that your podcast is not just another little podcast sitting on the charts at 783, but you're going places. Well done.
Thank you.
Good on you, Tom. Keep up the good work on yours. And for all of our listeners, we'll have all of Tom's details in the show notes if you want to connect to him via social media. But we'll catch up soon. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you so much.
All right, Ben, as you can tell, Tom's got... I love talking to guests who have been investing for a long time. And since 1993, Ben, if you do the maths, I said 30 years and you said, mate, it's actually 29.
Well, Tom just turned 50. So again, happy birthday, Tom.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, look, it just goes to show you that, you know, well-practiced. And there wasn't a lot of theory other than, you know, Tom was blessed. He grew up in the inner west of Sydney and he's just been buying properties in the patch that he knew really well. He's obviously an estate agent, so he's got an advantage to do that. But again, just he sacrificed. He committed to it. He was adding value.
He hustled to get his deposits. It was
just terrific stuff.
He didn't complain about affordability. Terrific. But you said he's blessed to live in the inner west. Back in the day, that wasn't necessarily... Oh, someone's trying to ask you a question or two there.
Oxford business suit. Should I... Oxford, I've got a winter sale on.
How timely is that? But, yeah, so back in the day, when he was actually born in the inner west, it wasn't as... popular as it is now. So no,
working class area that's gentrifying.
So there's a good messages all around. So again, we thank Tom for
thank
for
you,
joining
Tom.
Us on the couch. Hey, today my life hack is brought to you
by
the Stig.
The Stig!
The Stig!
Ivis!
So over to you, Ivis. Tell us all about it.
No, don't laugh. Look, there's no cameras.
Just as we expected, Ben.
Yeah. What did she say?
Ivis would make for a really great auctioneer, wouldn't she? Because you know how the great auctioneers always say, you know, and do I have an opening bid? And then there's absolute silence. And then the auctioneer always says, and I didn't tell you how quiet this street was because I knew I'd take this opportunity during the silence to let you know. So thanks for that, Ivis.
So what have we got? What has Ivis given us a hack? Is that the one we saw the other?
I've actually used it since because all my life hacks are about the ones that I do for myself, which puts me under enormous pressure to find 52 life hacks each year. Not like Did You Know, where you just sort of, you know, randomly Google your facts at the last minute. But well thought out, Ben. Your Did You Know is well thought out. Do you know when you search in Google, folks, you put in whatever it is, gluten free. GAPS friendly ice cream, right?
I thought you were going to say grass.
Gluten free.
So let's say we were going to
green grass.
Let's say we're going to do that, right? And then whoever has got the best SEO with the best tags will pop up on the first page.
Yep.
But what if I actually want to know where the gluten free GAPS friendly ice cream actually is? So I put the in the search field with my rabbit's ears, the inverted
marks.
Commas, the parentheses.
Yeah.
And then the search will be done exactly what I put in the search column. So therefore, I bypass everyone's SEO, I bypass everyone's tags, and I actually find in Google where that combination of words actually exists.
Oh, and you can do that in Outlook as well, Brass. If you're searching for Outlook, if you're looking for an email that you can't find,
boom.
You put the, so there you go.
Boom.
I have come back 15 all. I've returned that, sir.
Mate, you've delivered, I've got to say. Woo. But so there you go, folks.
My job here is done. See you there, we are.
If you are going to search in Google today, put your inverted commas in and see if you get to your outcome quicker than most. So, Ben?
Are we ready?
Over to you, mate.
Oh, here we go. Okay, so CoreLogic data, our friends at CoreLogic again, have produced 20-year change in dwelling value. So are we ready? Do we want to start with in the last 20 years? Now, in some areas like Darwin and Hobart, this is only in Hobart, just for technical, is only over 19 years, and Darwin's over 18 years, okay, because that's when they've been collecting the data. Mm-hmm. So Darwin starts off with a gain in value, in dwelling values, of 171.5% gain in 20 years. Coming in at number two is Hobart. Again, that was obviously only 18 years. Hobart's 19 years. 248%.
Can't go broke making a profit.
The next...
Can't be better than that.
What do you think's next?
After Hobart?
Yeah.
The old hometown?
Your hometown? Well, no, Bryce. Let me inform you that it's been Brisbane.
Bris Vegas.
Coming in at 271.3% growth in the last 20 years.
Oh, that's right, because you've had the mining boom in that time as well, so...
Then
bring it home, Perth.
What's next?
Adelaide or Perth, and I'll go.
Okay, it's Perth next.
Yep.
And it's 274.5% growth. Adelaide, 276.2% growth.
Surely no one can beat that.
That you know, that's coming in at number four.
Right.
Number three is
what's left? Melbourne, Sydney, and Canberra. So it'll have to be Canberra.
Canberra, our nation's capital. coming in. So we've gone from 276 to 346.4.
Leaves the state of origin left, man.
Sorry, that was combined capitals. 325.2.
All right.
Don't ever get me to read the lotto numbers on the news. I'd be terrible. 325.2.
You'd have 23 winners all knocking down the door here. But he said. All right, yep. State
so
of origin.
So now the last two.
Come on.
Melbourne v Sydney.
All right.
What is it?
This is for Damo in the office.
Last 20
State
years.
State of origin.
Okay. Sydney comes in at number two. I should have done it the other way around. I should have announced the winner and then... No. Anyway, I've done it. Number two, coming in at 334.3% growth.
That's incredible.
In 20 years. So number one.
Oh, hang on.
And not just by a little bit. Oh. This is where it becomes quite interesting. Right, so 334, Melbourne in the last 20 years, 461.4%.
Holy cow.
So that's over 100%, 130, around 130% better than the other markets, which is just insane.
Yep, that's incredible. That's
in terms of that. So there you go. So the last 20 years, CoreLogic data. Our friends at CoreLogic, check them out. Basically, that's the
it's a bit over three doubles.
20-year change. Yeah.
First one goes 100%, yep. Then the next one goes to 200%, and the next one goes to 400%. So there's your three doubling cycles. So
incredible.
Mate, who says that property doesn't go up in value?
Oh, no. So there you go. Now, obviously, you know, we've had very good times, low interest rates.
That actually supports what Tom was saying earlier as our special guest as well. So very,
Melbourne
very
and Sydney
good.
Story, yes.
Very, very good insights, Ben. A couple bit of housekeeping. If you're a first-time listener, go all the way back to episode one.
Yes,
and
please.
Our tip, our life hack there is to do it in 1.5 speed. The reason is because all of the podcasts build layer upon layer upon layer. So we're not as polished in episode one and two, but the content's still there, Ben.
How about 1 to 80?
That's going to say,
first 100. You're being very generous.
First 100, we're pretty scratchy, so forgive us on that.
And we're probably still scratchy, let's be honest.
And I wanted to shout out, because we do request, if people have got the time, energy, and we've added some value to their life, that they go and rate us on iTunes. We had someone rate us recently, gave us a 4.
Oh, thank you. That's fantastic.
Says it was a 5-star podcast. But we rated as 4 because we split up the interviews. So
into part one, part two.
So, but thank you for
that's
that.
That's right. I appreciate
and,
that.
Good feedback. And keep an eye out for the upcoming Money magazine, Ben, because we've featured in that quite heavily.
Yes.
And finally, social media, Ben, at the Property Couch, at Ben, at Bryce Holdaway, and at Ben Kingsley AU. And before we sign off, I was just going to give a little apology about why. No, she's not, because we know we've been there before. Ben, we've been off air for a little bit. And that's because of our wonderful, wonderful, wonderful audience who are looking to download our content has meant that our server has responded.
It's full.
By saying error 404.
It's full. Too many people are trying
Too many
to download
people
it.
Are trying to download. So we are, so if you're hearing this, it's already been fixed. It's already been fixed, but we are upgrading our server, yes. And
we do
that
apologize.
Will be sorted. So what a terrific episode, Ben.
I've been waiting to get Tom on for a long time, so it's been a thrill to have him on.
Yeah, agreed. So mate, now you've got your sign off.
2's later.
Oh, no.
No, see?
Oh, there we go.
See? Just remember, Bryce, knowledge is empowering, but only if you act on it.
Until next week, folks.
See you later.
See you later.